The National Broadcasting Company presents Radio City Playhouse, Attraction 65. Ladies and gentlemen, here is the director of Radio City Playhouse, Perry W. Junkin.
Thank you, Fred, and welcome everyone to Radio City Playhouse. If, when discussing plots, you asked 100 people what they considered the ideal elements of a good story, you'd probably get 100 different answers, because story preferences are at best a matter of personal taste. However, every so often, all of us connected with Radio City Playhouse get an irresistible hankering after a smooth, restrained, but still slightly swashbuckling murder mystery. So this is what we are bringing you today. Here is David Gothard as Walter Kenyon in The Wine of Orapallo, Attraction 65 on Radio City Playhouse.
It's taken me a long time, but at last I'm sitting at Christopher Faber's desk. The chair seems to fit me almost as though it were made to order. For 15 years, I've wanted to sit in this chair in this office. Now it's mine. The power, the position, everything. And Christopher Faber is dead. I remember the morning the idea came to me. I was waiting in Mr. Faber's outer office for our regular 11 o'clock conference. Every morning at 11 o'clock, Mr. Faber condescended to talk to me. No other member of the staff ever spoke to him, except his secretary, Miss Hilden. What's the great man doing, Miss Hilden?
I imagine he'll buzz when he's ready.
And all the little slaves will come around.
You don't like him, do you, Mr. Kenyon?
Does anybody?
I do.
Honestly like him?
Yes.
He's affected, malicious, insincere, and a snob.
And a genius.
Genius is a very loosely used word, Miss Hilden.
Don't you think it's dangerous to talk like this to me?
Feel in a tattletale mood?
I am his private secretary. I consider it my duty to inform him on, shall we say, the attitude of the staff.
And you can also tell him that I consider any man who imports Spanish brandy and specially ground coffee to drink at 11 o'clock every morning is a fool. Well, shall I go on?
Suit yourself.
Well, you can also tell him that everybody on the staff hates his insides, including me.
If you're so unhappy here, Mr. Kenyon, why don't you quit?
Because I've put 15 years of hard work into this magazine, and not even Christopher Faber can make me give that up.
Don't be too sure, Mr. Kenyon. And he's made a success of the magazine.
The magazine was a success long before Faber ever got here. Because a lot of us gave our lives to making it a success. I started as a kid just out of college. I had the rather naive notion that someday I'd be top man.
There's the top man, Mr. Kenyon. And if I were you, I wouldn't forget it. Yes, Mr. Faber.
I'll see Kenyon now.
Like to go a-running, Mr. Kenyon?
And right on the dot of 11, too. Isn't it dramatic? Well, good morning, Mr. Faber.
Good morning, Kenyon.
I heard from the Crocker Pathological Foundation.
Hand me the brandy glass. Thank you.
And they'd be happy to have us do a story.
Naturally. Why wouldn't they be happy?
So I was thinking that Donaldson would...
Magnificent brandy, Kenyon. Superb bouquet. Very rare, too. Very little of it in the world. El vino del Orapallo. Or do you understand Spanish?
As a matter of fact, I speak three languages.
I've never heard you say anything important in any of them. Superb flavor.
I was thinking that Donaldson would do well on the foundation.
You know, Kenyon, wine is very much like life. The epicure drinks only so much from the cask, delicately savoring the bouquet, the zest. The fool drinks it all, even to the dregs, to ultimate bitterness.
Yes, sir.
You were saying...
About a writer to handle the Crocker Foundation story. I was thinking...
Indeed. I irritate you, don't I, Kenyon?
No, Mr. Faber. I understand you.
You do, eh? No, Kenyon, you understand your $30,000 a year salary. But go on. Donaldson, yes, Donaldson. I hardly think he has the scientific background for a story about disease and viruses. It's a complicated subject.
Yes, sir, I know,
but... don't know. You wouldn't have suggested Donaldson. The Crocker Foundation is dealing with the elemental stuff of life itself. The subject is complex and dramatic. St. Paul Denning.
Yes, I thought of Denning, too, but we've been working him rather hard lately. He isn't in the best of health, you know. His nerves were pretty well shot during the war.
I'm not in the best of health either, but I'm at my desk every day.
From 11 to 2.
I'll overlook that. Send Denning.
I promised him 2 weeks off. He's just been married. He didn't have a honeymoon, so I gave him his vacation now.
And cancel it.
I hardly like to do that.
We're still paying him his salary, are we not?
Yes.
Then send him.
Yes, sir.
Oh, Kenyon. You've just been married, you say?
Yes.
What unfortunate young woman married Paul Denning?
A girl he met in Paris, a singer. She's French.
Since he's from Paris, that isn't unusual. What sort of a singer?
I don't know quite. She's from the Opera Comique.
Oh, her name, man. I was music critic for Le Figaro in Paris. What's her name?
Claire Boudet.
Oh, Boudet. Claire Boudet. I remember. I knew a lot of Opera Comique people. Now, what are you staring at?
I just had an idea.
Oh, was it painful?
That perhaps you'd like to meet her. Hmm? Supposing I arrange a little dinner.
You're joking.
Just Paul and his wife and you and I.
You think you could stand to spend an evening with me, socially?
It wouldn't have to be a very long evening.
Touché. Well, I suppose I might as well, but don't harbor the notion that a dinner party will get Paul Denning taken off the Crocker assignment. Tell him to be ready to leave on Sunday. Those are orders.
Orders. Always it was orders. For years, I'd put up with his incredible rudeness, his talk about art and wines and music, the connoisseur, the dilettante, the snob. Yes. Yes, I'd carry out his orders. But this time, I'd had an idea. Just the glimmering of an idea, but it would do no harm to try. I would assign Paul Denning to the Foundation story, but I'd wait until after the dinner party. Faber knew Claire Boudet. She'd told me that. Perhaps they might renew their acquaintanceship with Paul looking on. That would be at least a start.
Oh, Monsieur Faber, c'est charmant, charmant. Vous êtes un homme magnifique.
Un homme n'est pas homme jusqu'à ce qu'il soit plein d'âge et de raison.
Vous avez raison, mais je ne vous dirai pas vieux.
Oh, merci.
Claire, will you talk English, please?
Oh, Paula... I'm so sorry. We did not mean to leave you out of our little joke.
Of course we didn't.
It's just so long since I speak French with anybody. I did not mean to be unkind.
Of course you didn't, Paul. How would you feel if you were in Paris speaking French all the time and you suddenly met someone who spoke English?
I'm sorry. Forget it.
Don't you speak any French, Paul?
No, I don't.
You must get weary speaking English all the time, Mrs. Denning.
Oh, it's just that all the time I have to think so hard. In French, I converse. In English, I just talk.
Besides, French is a much more beautiful language.
English suits me fine.
Mrs. Denning, has Paris changed much since the war?
Paris never changes, Monsieur Faber.
No, it's eternal, isn't it? The little café on l'avenue de l'Opéra, le Café Impérial. You remember it, Mrs. Denning?
Ah, oui, l'Impérial. But that is where we met, Monsieur Faber. It is still there.
Is it indeed? I always picture it on a spring day. Chestnut trees in blossom, sunshine splashing the pavements, the sky blue as it's possible to be. Wouldn't it be wonderful if one could go back to springtime?
Come in. Oh, hello, Paul.
Good morning, Walter. I'm sorry I'm late, but Claire and I are getting ready to leave for the country.
Sit down, Paul.
Thanks. A swell dinner last night.
Did you enjoy it?
Do we ever enjoy our managing editor? Oh, Lord, how I hate that man.
You're going to hate him more, I'm afraid.
Oh? Why?
Your vacation's been canceled.
Canceled?
Postponed, then.
Well, who says so?
Mr. Faber says so.
Claire and I were going away. We didn't have a honeymoon, and you promised me 2 weeks ago.
I know, Paul, and I'm sorry. I'm terribly sorry. Believe me, if it's the Crocker Foundation story, the German virus stuff, Faber wants you to write it.
But you said you were sending Donaldson.
Faber prefers you. He gave me definite orders. I tried to talk him out of it, but he was adamant. You're to do it.
I won't. I won't do it.
Paul, I haven't much time. You know what he's like. He wants you to do the story. You either do it or you quit. Now, which is it to be?
But it's such a lousy trick. We've made all our plans.
Which is it to be, Paul?
When did he decide this?
Oh, well, I'm not enough of a psychologist to know when he makes his decisions. Maybe it was at dinner last night. I don't know. He said he was impressed with your grasp of the subject, said you seemed to be very well informed.
On what?
On disease and drugs and viruses and so forth.
Last night? The subject didn't even come up. Faber was so busy talking French to Claire, he didn't make a direct remark to me all evening.
Oh, Paul, surely you're not jealous of Faber.
Why? Should I be jealous?
But the things he said to Claire were very innocent, really.
What things?
Oh, yes, you don't understand French, do you? Well, now, look, Paul, I know it's disappointing, and believe me, I'm sorry, but you can go on your vacation the moment you finish the Crocker story. It shouldn't take you more than 8 or 10 days.
When am I supposed to leave?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow? Is he crazy? I've got to work on some background material. I don't know enough about pathology to go up there just...
Paul Faber says you leave tomorrow. Look, Paul, if you feel that... Well, why don't you take Claire with you?
Why do you say it like that?
Well, since you planned a vacation, I thought maybe you'd like to take her along.
Will Faber okay the expense?
I'll guarantee it. Now, you go home and get ready. And whatever you do, be out of town by noon tomorrow. Yes?
It's 11 o'clock, Mr. Kenyon. And you know who's waiting.
All right. I'll ask him about your taking Claire. I know it'll be all right. Now go home and relax.
When, Kenyon, have you taken it upon yourself to subvert the policies of this publication?
I wasn't aware that Denning taking his wife along was covered by a definite policy.
Mrs. Denning is rather distracting, Kenyon. I don't approve of writers taking their families with them on an assignment. It interferes with their work.
I'm afraid I told him he could take her.
Then untell him. That's an order.
Yes, Mr. Faber.
Oh, Paul, you will never, never get that suitcase closed. She's too full up.
Your husband, madam, can do anything. Now watch. Oh, great. See if you can't take some of the stuff out, huh? Hello?
Hello, Paul.
Hello, Walter.
I'm glad I got you before you left. I'm afraid I have some bad news.
Now what?
You can't take Claire.
What?
Faber blew up. Says she's too distracting.
But, Walter, we're all packed. We've been looking forward to it. You suggested it yourself.
I know I did. I didn't dream he'd object. I'm sorry, Paul, really I am, but Claire can't go. Those are his orders.
Someday I'm going to kill that guy.
Not a bad idea. Look, call her up every night. I'll okay the long-distance charges. And I'm sorry, Paul.
All right, Walter. Well, that's that.
What is it?
Faber says you can't go.
Cannot go? I don't understand.
You can't come with me on the trip. You've got to stay here. Faber says so.
Then I will stay here.
Is that all you've got to say?
If I have to stay here, I will stay.
You don't sound very disappointed.
If Monsieur Faber say no, eh bien, is no.
Yeah. Claire, how well did you know Christopher Faber in Paris?
I suppose you would say he was an acquaintance. Why?
You used to meet him at some cafe, didn't you?
I met him once, that is all. I was with a friend. She told me he was a man I should know, the music critic of Le Figaro. She introduced us.
And after that?
After?
Oh, stop pretending, Claire. After the first time, did you see him again?
Paul, what is the matter with you?
It's very strange that after meeting you again at dinner the other night, Faber should be so anxious to get me out of town. It's also very strange that he should suddenly decide you're not to go with me.
Oh, Paul, surely you do not think that... Paul, I was 20, just starting in the theater, and nobody. Christopher Faber was an important critic. He was never interested in me. Oh, Paul, you know that is true. Darling, you're jealous without the tiniest cause. Really, you are. But that's all right. Keep on being a little jealous. I like it.
It was very easy to keep Paul Denning out of town. There were always delays and corrections, and I blamed them all on Faber. Rewrites, more pictures, more data, check this. It was very easy. I kept him there as long as I could. And then, one night, my phone rang. It was Paul. He was beginning to break.
Well, I'm not going to put up with it any longer.
Paul, it isn't my fault. He's been a fiend lately, unbearable.
But three rewrites. What am I, a kid? Is he crazy?
It's tough, Paul, I know, but if you have dinner with Dr. Langdon tomorrow night, maybe you can finish up by the middle of next week. Langdon should be of a lot of help.
Yeah, sure. Well, thanks for setting up Langdon for me. I've been trying to reach him.
Well, is that everything?
Walt.
Yes?
Is Claire seeing Faber?
Oh, Paul, don't pay any attention to rumors.
Are there rumors?
Oh, Paul, please.
Well, is he seeing her?
Well, why don't you ask Claire? You phone her every night.
I did ask her.
And what did she say?
She said no. What would you expect her to say?
But it isn't anything serious, Paul. Believe me. If he is seeing Claire, I know there's nothing to it. He's just fond of, you know, Paris and all that.
Listen, Walt. As soon as I'm through this dinner with Langdon tomorrow night, I'm driving to New York.
Now, Paul, listen.
I'm sorry. I've got to see Claire.
Hello? Hello? The plan was beginning to move. There were elements of luck in it, but Paul was unstable and jealous and married to a very beautiful woman whom he didn't quite trust. Yes, Paul could be depended upon to react violently. There were other things that had to fit into place, too. First, Faber had to stay home tomorrow night. This I took a chance on. He stayed in 9 nights out of 10 because of his health. Second, Paul mustn't arrive in the city until well after midnight. His dinner date could reasonably be expected to last until 7:30 or 8. It was at least a 5-hour drive home. That made it 1 o'clock. If Paul arrived in New York by 2 o'clock, things would work fine. I had no difficulty in getting Claire to have dinner with me. The luck part was that she decided to stay in town and not go home at all.
Oh, c'est merveilleux, magnifique. So gay, like Paris.
I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Oh, for 3 weeks at home every night, and Paul away. Will he be home soon?
I hope so.
You'll phone tonight and wonder where I am.
Well, he'll phone again tomorrow night.
Yes. Oh, Walter, I'm having such a wonderful evening. I'm never going home again.
On the contrary, you're going to be in Penn Station in exactly 20 minutes.
Half past two now. It's impossible.
Your last plane home leaves in 25 minutes.
Oh, no, no, this commuting. How I hate it.
That's what you get for living in the country.
Attends, j'ai une idée. I have a friend, Marie Deslauriers. Often she has asked me to stay all night in town with her. Tonight I will go. Oh, I cannot bear 30 minutes on that horrible train after all this champagne. I will telephone Marie. She will be enchantée.
I hadn't expected that she'd stay out all night. Now it was perfect. It was 4 o'clock when I let her out at her friend's house. By 4:20, I was home and in bed. I just made it. At 4:30, there was a frantic ringing at the door.
All right, I'm coming.
Paul! Oh, do you want to wake everybody in the building?
Where is she?
Oh, what's the matter? Come in. Come in, man.
Where is she?
Where's who?
Claire.
Oh, how should I know?
All the way in, I've been phoning. I stopped at every town and called her. She's been out all evening. I called Faber, too. He said she wasn't there.
Oh?
He sounded kind of funny. Is she out there with him?
Paul, go home.
I've been home. She's not there. That's the first place I went.
Well, as a matter of fact, she spent the evening with me.
When did that occur to you?
It's true, honestly. We went to dinner in the theater. It got pretty late, and we were having such a good time, she decided to stay in town with a friend. Some woman with a French name. Oh, now, Paul, don't look like that. I'm not covering for Faber.
He's got you where he's got the rest of us. Hypnotized. You not only worked for him, you lied for him.
Now, look, Paul.
If Claire's out there with him, I'll kill him.
Then go ahead, kill him. But stop yelling at me. It's not my fault if Claire prefers Faber to you. If you think they're having an affair, go out and settle it with Faber. But get out of here and leave me alone. There was a wonderful frenzy, jealousy in his eyes. His hands were shaking, his face was white. After he'd left, I sat there alone and willed for him to go out to Christopher Faber's and kill him. Faber would be contemptuous and insulting. Paul was half crazy with jealousy and hate. Put them all together, and I was pretty sure that what did happen would happen.
I can't believe it.
Oh, now, let's not have any tears, Miss Hilton. All the tears in the world will not bring Mr. Faber back to life.
I just can't believe it.
How did you find out?
His houseboy phoned as soon as I got to work. He was shot through the heart. They called the police.
Have they any idea how it happened?
I don't know. The houseboy was hysterical. Mr. Critchfield's been on the phone like fury. The whole place is in an uproar.
It's quiet enough in here.
His office is always quiet. He ran it that way. Smoothly.
You liked him, didn't you?
He was a genius.
Yes, I suppose he was in his own way.
The magazine will suffer.
The magazine won't suffer.
Oh, I suppose you're taking over.
Miss Hilden, I have taken over. Hand me the brandy glass.
No, they're his. Everything in this office
the
is his.
The brandy glass, Miss Hilden. From now on, I'll be indulging in the 11 o'clock ceremony. The brandy glass, Miss Hilden. Thank you. Such bouquet. El vino del Oropal. Delicious. Order me 5 cases, Miss Hilden. You know where he gets it.
Grabbing at everything even before he's cold, aren't you, Mr. Kenyon?
Why not? It's mine now.
It'll never be yours. You can drink his brandy and strut around his office, but you'll never be the man he was. Never.
Oh, delicious. Really delicious.
You'll never replace him. Never. You haven't got what it takes. He had this wonderful, studied, conscious arrogance, but underneath there was passion and soul.
Miss Hilden.
Yes?
I dislike you intensely.
Will there be anything else?
You're a thoroughly disgusting woman.
Thank you.
And you're fired, of course.
Of course. Do you want me to leave now?
Let's say 5 o'clock.
All right. Let's.
Are you Mr. Kenyon?
Young man, before you walk into this office, you knock. Supposing you try it again.
I'm sorry, I'm looking for Mr. Kenyon.
I am Mr. Kenyon. If you wish to remain on the staff of this magazine, go outside, close the door, and knock. Then I will see you.
I'm Lieutenant O'Keefe of Homicide. I'm sorry if I'm intruding.
Oh, yes, excuse me. We're all quite upset here. This is Miss Hilton, Lieutenant. She was Mr. Faber's stenographer.
Miss Hilton?
Lieutenant?
What do you want, Lieutenant?
One of the young ladies outside said that you might be able to give me some information about a Mr. Paul Denning.
Yes. What do you want to know?
Was he on your staff?
He is on our staff. Huh? A writer. A very good one, incidentally. Why?
He came into the station half an hour ago, completely hysterical. Said he'd lost his wife and that he'd murdered Christopher Faber.
Murdered? Paul Denning?
Go on, Lieutenant.
Paul Denning?
He said he'd killed Faber around 11 this morning. Of course, that's ridiculous because it's only 11:15 now. Faber's been dead about 7 hours. He shot himself around 4 this morning, we think.
Shot himself? Suicide?
Yes, yes, there was a note. Rather poetic, something about life being like wine. Said he'd tasted the bouquet and drained life to the dregs. Oh, sorry, Mr. Kenyon, I know this is painful.
Was there anything else, Lieutenant?
What sort of a job was Denning working on?
Why, he was writing a story on the Crocker Pathological Foundation.
I see.
They've developed some new drugs. They're supposed to be very powerful.
Would they be working with viruses?
Yes, I suppose so.
Well, that checks anyway. He said he'd stolen some kind of virus from this doctor last night. Said he had enough to kill 100 men in a tiny vial. Then he said he'd sneaked in here early this morning.
In here, in this office?
Yes, yes. And put the virus in a bottle of brandy. Is that the bottle of brandy?
Just heard The Wine of Oropello by John Hasty, Attraction 65 on Radio City Playhouse. David Gothard was Walter Kenyon, Louis Van Roten was Christopher Faber, Alan Stevenson was Paul Denning, Marilyn Erskine, Miss Hilden, Hope Miller was Claire Boudette. The music was composed and conducted by Dr. Roy Shield. The entire production was under the direction of Harry W. Junkin.
This is Harry Junkin again. Next week, a special Christmas show. The charming story by Paul Gallico called 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, all about newspapers and goats and Christmas. We hope you'll join us next week, Attraction 66 on Radio City Playhouse. Good afternoon, everybody.
What's on NBC today? It's The Browning Version, starring Maurice Evans and Edna Best in their original roles on Theater Guild on the Air tonight on NBC. And then stay tuned for the songs of Thomas L. Thomas, now joining the cast on American Album of Familiar Music. This is Fred Collins speaking. Now stay tuned for James Melton and Harvest of Stars on NBC.